Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome, and thank you for joining Intersemi third quarter of 2020 earnings conference call. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. To send questions, please type in the question and answer icon on the left of the screen. The presentation will be available online. The webcast link has been provided to you in your registration email. I would now like to turn the conference over to Paulo Diniz, CFO, Gabriel Mota, Head of Treasury, and Nicholas Baines, Head of Planning at Intersemi. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Nicholas Baines, Head of Financial Planning and Analysis for Intersemi. Happy to say that here with me today is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and also Gabriel Mota, Corporate Treasurer for Intersemi. Therefore, similar to our last two earnings calls, we'll run a fireside chat with Paulo, Gabriel, and me. Before we start, please note that on this call, you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the annual financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we'll make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intersemi's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2020 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations, and actual results and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time filings Intersemi makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intersemi disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intersemi third quarter 20 financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. Well, in order to get started, let me ask Paulo to give us a general overview of Intersemi's top line in the third quarter.
Good morning, Nick, and extensive to Gabriel. It's just great to have you here guys with us today. In a nutshell, our volume sold of cement and clinker reached 5,338,000 tons in the third quarter, which represented a 3% increase in comparison to the same quarter last year. However, in order to better visualize our top line, let me go through our building blocks, starting with the geographies on the other side of the Atlantic. Our African operations posted sales of 1,328,000 tons in the quarter, which represented a drop of 11% over the same period of last year. The volume of vendor for this drop was Egypt, with a retraction of 25% in comparison to the third quarter of last year. The local fragmented cement industry continues to present idle capacity in excess of 50%, while the state-owned giant player continues to flood the market with low-price products. To make things a bit more complicated, the Egyptian government decided to slow down the approval phase for construction licenses, aiming to ban illegal constructions, especially in the main cities such as Cairo and Alexandria. Therefore, the local cement industry is bleeding, with many players shutting down plants and generating negative EBITDA margins. After COVID outbreak, let's put it this way, compared to other countries, Mozambique has resumed some growth since May. Even if the big oil companies delayed their natural gas exploration projects, some small infrastructure projects are moving on, so that volumes of our operations reached a 6% expansion in the quarter in comparison to the same period of last year. Our last African country, South Africa, was the one most affected by the COVID, reflecting a long-lasting lockdown in previous months. The local economy continued to be severely hit, and as a result, the bulk cement market practically vanished. On the other hand, the bag market is showing some interesting signs, so that our production was back to normal levels, and we were able to outperform the market, although it's still posing a 1% decline in volume compared to the third quarter of last year. Crossing the Atlantic and back to South America, after a severe lockdown and significant negative impact during the second quarter of this year, Argentina started to show solid recovery on bag demand. In fact, the economic uncertainty that the country is facing, in particular concerning the local currency purchase power, is making consumer perception to see real estate assets, including self-construction, as a form to value reserve for the dollar. Therefore, despite the bulk market being heavily impacted by the absence of infrastructure projects and private works, our operations in Argentina posted sales of 1,533,000 tons in the quarter, a growth of 3% over the same period of last year. Last, but not least, Brazil. No doubt that the pandemic changed the consumer's share of wallet spending, so that home improvement became the flavor of the season, boosting self-construction. Something extremely important, as we know that in Brazil, 2/3 of the cement demand is sold on bags. Additionally, the Central Bank of Brazil is keeping the lowest interest rate ever, 2%, so that families are more motivated to buy their own houses instead of renting them, and investors to migrate from their traditional financial investments to invest in the real economy, including the support of some real estate development. In addition, we cannot forget the Corona voucher, where low-income people use such benefits to improve their homes. Therefore, our operations in Brazil registered a sales volume of 2,527,000 tons, a robust expansion of 13% in comparison to the same quarter of last year. Therefore, volume-wise, even factoring in the pandemic consequences, we cannot say that we were surprised with the top-line volume of 5,338,000 tons, meaning a 3% growth over the same quarter of last year. Perhaps surprising a bit was the 11% drop in Africa, but even more surprising was the recovery in V format in Brazil, with a 13% volume growth.
Good morning, everyone. This is Gabriel. Let just me take Nick's question on the top line and expand a little bit. As we all know, currently some emerging market currencies are in depreciated level when compared to last year. Therefore, Paulo, it would also be great if you could provide an overview of Intercement's top line performance in dollars terms.
Sure, Gabriel. Very good point. as the 5,338,000 tons translated into sales of $371 million, considering only our continued operations, as Paraguay operation was sold in August. Therefore, in a Alice in Wonderland scenario, that is, if dollar exchange rates were kept stable, our top line would have rose by 27% to $443 million. Unfortunately, we are not in Wonderland and Alice is far away, perhaps isolated because of COVID-19. In fact, average cement price of $61 per ton was 5% lower than the average price in the same quarter of last year, so that it continued to be highly affected by the devaluation of local currencies in some countries where we operate. However, even though the $371 million top line in the quarter represented a 2.6% increase over the dollar amount registered in the third quarter of last year, great evolution after a painful hit in the second quarter. Brazil, responsible for 50% of Intercement volume in the quarter, posted an average price up by 33% in local currency compared to the second quarter of last year, backed by a new go-to-market strategy that is emphasizing retail expansion while keeping wholesale channels and also expanding to new countryside areas, which generated an increased assertiveness on prices and led to more decentralized sales. However, due to Brazilian reais depreciation in the period, prices in US dollars were down 2% in the quarter. Argentina, our controlled company, had a weight of 28% on our sales volume. Luma Negra kept its undisputed market leadership and preserved a health pricing level of over $80 per ton. That is only 3% lower than in the third quarter of last year in hard currency, although in the back of a FX rate fully managed by the federal government. Our operations in Africa accounted for 25% of our volume. And while our operations in Egypt went through a price decline due to its tough market context and excess capacity, Mozambique prices in local currency were 2% up, and in the case of South Africa, 6% up. However, in hard currency, the three African countries registered declining prices due to their currency depreciation in the period. In summary, money-wise, African operations top line of $91 million dropped by 17% compared to the same period of last year. Brazil sales of $130 million was around the same amount registered in the same period of last year, while sales in Argentina increased by 28% to $150 million.
Well, Paulo, it's really a pity that all the volume efforts after the pandemic could not be translated into dollar sales growth due to currency movements. Having that in mind, what about the operating performance? When we factor in all that, I mean volume, product mix, currencies, prices, costs, and inflation, what can we say about all that and the consequent EBITDA for the third quarter of 2020?
Before anything, let me say that similarly to my comments on our top line of $371 million, I will also exclude the impact of our discontinued operations in Paraguay from cost and expenses. Therefore, our total cash cost base, including variable, fixed, and expenses, amounted to $275 million, an important 10% decline when compared to the same quarter of last year. Yes, we had the reverse benefit of the currency depreciation, but also the benefit of some utility tariffs that were kept frozen during the pandemic. However, and moreover, all our industrial KPIs show technical improvements, reflecting the company's great focus on productivity and industrial efficiency. In fact, operational cash costs continue to decrease as a result of great efforts from all teams, being Brazil the largest contributor due to a significant operational turnaround in place, based on the optimization of resources and mitigation of logistic bottlenecks. Therefore, we were able to post an adjusted EBITDA of $104 million in the quarter, a strong expansion of 79% when compared to the $58 million in the same period of previous year. Perhaps even more important in a growing phase was the EBITDA margin, which reached 25.9%, an improvement of 10.1 percentage points when compared to the same quarter of last year. Let me just state that most of this improvement came from Brazil, that came on improved its results and reached an EBITDA, just EBITDA of $41 million, an expansion of $24 million in comparison to the same quarter of last year, and posted an outstanding margin of 31.7%, up 19 percentage points. And yes, we cannot disregard the resilience of our controlled operations in Argentina, with an adjusted EBITDA of $49 million and a margin of 32.6%. As one can see, the third quarter was one that we have in our minds for quite some time, especially if we think that it came after a terrible pandemic wave.
Yes, Paulo. I must say that it's really fantastic to see Inter Cement posting this kind of EBITDA and margins after some very good years of heavy pain. It really shows the management's perseverance to pursue a real change through the years. Now I'd like to move a bit below the line of EBITDA, so that I can bring Gabriel to the discussion. Is there anything relevant you want to emphasize on the below the line, Gabriel?
Thanks, Nick. But before I enter that situation, perhaps Paulo can quickly comment on working capital, CapEx, and asset transaction.
Yes, here we go. In terms of our working capital, fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities was just super, with a favorable variance of $85 million as the pandemic forced the company to focus even more on cash preservation, including revising our inventory safety margins, better management of receivables, and enhancing partnerships with suppliers. CapEx of $33 million in the quarter, 44% lower than the same period of last year, reflects the discipline, rationalization on investments arise from the pandemic in order to preserve cash. Additionally, Lamari 2 project is moving towards its final phase, as commissioning is expected towards the second quarter of next year. Also important to mention was the sale of our controlling stake of our operation in Paraguay, which is reflected under the $95 million of asset sales. Considering the premium for internalized part of the dollars into Argentina to prepay local debt, the divestment valuation in Paraguay reached the double digits in terms of EBITDA multiple, an extremely attractive level for Inter Cement.
Great. Perhaps Gabriel can jump in to comment on the financial flows in the quarter.
Yes, let me start by saying that with all these operational improvements mentioned before, in addition to the sale of the operation in Paraguay, our total debt dropped to $1.577 billion, while our net debt went to $1.309 billion, a reduction of $262 million when compared to December last year. Out of this amount, we had debt reduction of $161 million in the quarter, with the major part coming from the divested Paraguayan operation itself, and also the prepayment of local debt in Argentina using part of the proceeds of Paraguay sale. However, as I just mentioned, not only operational improvements in the Paraguay sale contributed to this debt reduction, but also the depreciated real on the debt denominated in reais. Important to refresh that our debt refinancing in June through the new debentures issued in reais is enabling Intersement to better match its cash flow generation with the debt service, as now we have 56% of our debt denominated in Brazilian reais. Having that in mind, we registered $35 million on interest paid in the quarter, 46% decline in comparison to the $65 million paid in the third quarter of 2019. Again, this reduction was a result of, first, the total debt reduction after the prepayment of some local debt in Argentina by internalizing part of the proceeds of the Paraguay operation sale. And second, the lower interest rates, mainly the Selic rate in real. And finally, the exchange currency effect due to the depreciated real level currently.
Well, let me add something here. As after all what was said, our total cash flow reached a surplus of $62 million a quarter in comparison to a deficit of $6 million in the same period of last year. Therefore, a favorable swing of $69 million driven by better cash flow from operating activities, lower investment disbursements, CapEx and working capital, and lower interest payments. And yes, some relevant debt was settled with part of the proceeds of the Paraguay divestiture. Therefore, we ended up the quarter with a cash position of $263 million, resulting in a net debt of $1,309 million, as mentioned by Gabriel. And considering the last 12 months EBITDA, we came to a financial leverage of 3.69 times, compared to 5.36 times in the same quarter of last year. Also, it should be noted that excluding Paraguay from the EBITDA calculation, the leverage would go up to 3.93 times, but still a great reduction compared to the previous level. Therefore, very, very pleased with the third quarter performance.
Okay, great. And just to make sure we have it fully covered, any other important point you'd like to comment, Gabriel, with regards to our debt position?
Well, as I mentioned before, we cannot underestimate the key change in our debt currency profile. Importantly, at the end of the quarter, we had 56% of the debt denominated in reais, another 39% denominated in dollars, and 5% denominated in other currencies, such as euros, pesos, meticais, Egyptian pounds, and rand. Also, it's worth mentioning that in case things continue to move in the current direction, the existing debt profile in terms of maturity does not imply any huge short-term liquidity pressure, since most of the maturing lines are for working capital at the operational company's level, and they are expected to be rolling as usual. Therefore, the key event will be only in 2024, when our debentures holders can anticipate the maturity schedule in case our 2024 bonds do not get refinanced. By the way, that was the rationale for the exchange offer we pursued last June. Let me also add another important subsequent move. After we closed the third quarter, basically, we repurchased $19 million or 100% of our debentures issued in 2012 that were still with investors in Brazil and were not included in the refinancing pack. We were successful in obtaining a credit line by an international bank in order to execute this repurchase. That was an important move, as such investors were always demanding waiver fees and many other asks every time we came to ask their support on anything.
Well, no doubt that third quarter was a great one for Intersement.
However, can we expect this healthy trend to continue? Although Intersemen does not provide any quantitative guidance, perhaps Paulo could share your broad view for the rest of the year and also for 2020 and 2021.
Well, as we keep saying internally, we are cautiously optimistic. And why is that? Let me break my cautiously optimistic view in two words, optimistic and cautious. Starting with optimistic, I see the continuity of a fantastic turnaround work at our operation in South Africa, despite all the collateral damage imposed by the COVID lockdown. Mozambique could enter a gold cycle in case the oil companies decide to move their plans on gas exploration. Egypt will really depend on what actions the government will take in order to give some extra air to cement players to breathe, in special with regards to the giant state plant. Uncertainties in Argentina shall keep alive the perception that as the local currency gets corroded, real estate is one of the best options for preserving the value of their assets. Brazil construction market presented a pandemic recovery in V, where a combination of home improvement, low interest rates, migration of financial investment, Corona voucher, and popular housing had a surprising boost on the cement market. Considering these trends, one has to be optimistic and conclude that Intercement may finish 2020 as its best year since 2014. However, it is in this precise moment that the second keyword comes into play, cautious. First, to start with, we cannot ignore a potential second wave of COVID, similar to what we are seeing in Europe and in some regions of America. Therefore, we must keep in our minds that we live in the last 2 months of April and May. Second, in Egypt, we do not see any concrete government initiative in order to better balance the local market. And despite all the blah, 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 many cement players continue to bleed. Third, in Mozambique, the market faces the entry of a new player from China, who is commissioning a new plant close to Maputo, the country's capital. And that is not to mention the armed conflicts that are taking place in the north region of the country. Fourth, in South Africa, we have considerable challenge to operate our plant at its capacity, not only because of the energy blackouts in the region, but also fly ash unavailability. And besides that, there's always the growing threat of imported cement from Pakistan and Vietnam. Point number five, in Argentina, the peso stability has been under increasing pressure. Despite all measures taken by the Argentinian government, the gap between the official rate, Cambio Mayorista, and the blue market continues to be huge, creating a considerable uncertainty on the local currency and bringing back the max devaluation ghost. And finally, in Brazil, some of the triggers for this outstanding cement market seem to have reached the ceiling. In fact, the Corona voucher is over. Great part of homeowners have already completed their home improvements. Interest rates in future marks prevent an upward trend. And the minimum market indications are that in November, the cement market was far below the level of recent months. Therefore, although we continue our daily journey exploring every single opportunity in front of us, we also keep preparing ourselves for some dark clouds that are on the horizon. So sorry if I didn't bring my crystal ball with me today, but hopefully that was somehow something helpful.
Yes, Paulo, certainly was very helpful and also down to earth. Let me change gears a bit and talk about the upcoming debentures, interest payment in December, and also the bonds coupon payment in January 2021. How the company sees this important disbursement in light of an exchange offer that was aborted?
Well, when our board of directors decided to pull off our exchange offer last July, we had developed a solid, healthy, and transparent dialogue with our key investors. Therefore, we were and are, I guess, very aware of some points that made them uncomfortable. At the same time, we decided to do our best and are doing our best in order to address these disbursements in December and January. We really want our investors to appreciate our efforts and be pleased with our board, our bonds. This way, in case of a green light from our board, we could re-engage with them in order to pursue a definitive solution for the company, which has to be fully supported by our investors.
Well said, Gabriel. This is precisely our approach. No doubt that it will be a matter of time when the green light will come from our board of directors. When that happens, we want to be able to sit down with our key investors, show that Intercement continues to fulfill its obligations, coupons have been paid as scheduled, in the GESPO pending points from the debentures were polished, so that we can count on their support to move the company to another financial level.
Well, Paulo and Gabriel, very good. No doubt that we had an excellent discussion so far. However, it would be great if we could count with some additional questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers. Why don't we move to the questions we got on the platform? So we've got a question here from Monica Luengo from Marinvial. Monica is asking if the good results in Brazil, did we see as sustainable after the Corona voucher ends?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Well, I guess it's important to realize that part of the natural recovery of the Brazilian market already took place during this year of 2020. Therefore, if one foresees that GDP in Brazil could be growing by around 3.5% next year, and usually the construction market and therefore the cement market has a magnifier when the Brazilian is growing at 3, so it goes with a growth much higher than that. We really believe that because of what happened this year, the growth should be very, very similar to the growth of Brazilian GDP. Therefore, I guess that we still have some very powerful drivers like low interest rates that should be around for next year. And therefore, I guess the construction market should somehow mirror what's going on with the GDP growth.
We also have a question from Jonathan from DebtWire. He's asking about the liquidity position at the holding company level, not including the subsidiaries, as of third quarter this year.
Well, our current position, as we posted in the report, we have around $260 million. Currently, this cash position amounts a little bit more, $270 million. Over this total amount, we have $81 million in the corporate level. So it's an adequate cash position in the holding level of the company.
We also have questions from Barbara. She has two questions. The first one is about the dividends payment after the quarter close. How was it structured? And the second question is regarding the expectations for cash generation in fourth quarter, including CapEx and also for 2021.
Well, Barbara, Loma Negra distributed dividends in October this year as a result of the significant cash inflow with the proceeds of Paraguayan asset sale. So there is no expectation for Loma becoming a recurrent dividend payer in the short term, especially on current environment on which Argentina federal government has been monitoring and limiting the remittance of hard currency. In terms of the second question for the expectation of the cash generation in the fourth quarter, I believe this was already answered during the call, and the minimum cash position, minimum cash balance in the company to comfortably operate with. That's your last question. Well, I have to say that it varies according to the level of uncertainty in the different current countries. But taking into consideration the countries in Africa that we operate, they do need a minimum cash position of 5 million. For Loma, level of 5 million can also be considered since the unit counts with strong support from banks and can access relevant overdrafts in the committed lines. Our operation in Brazil runs with a cash level of around $10 million and under certain conditions can easily access relevant amounts of accounts receivables. At the corporate level, we do need to count with another $35 million in cash. So in total, the minimum cash level is around $70 million that can bring necessary comfort to run entirely the operations. Obviously, that we are not considering debt amortization for such cash position.
We have an additional question from Jacob from Ashmore. He's asking about there is any plans to increase prices in Brazil and how much prices have been increasing in local currency terms. Well, I believe that local currency terms, we already answered during the call, around 30%. And Paul, would you like to add something?
I guess it's important to break this important question into pieces. The first one is really a pure price increase, and basically I guess that what I mean any business doing in Brazil is trying to somehow repass the local inflation, and so this is a kind of a constant goal that we are going to be pursuing. However, more important than that, as I try to mention in my comments, is really the revised go-to-market strategy that we are pursuing. And this is the main reason why the average price level of Intercement, I'm pretty sure that was well above industry average. Because again, I mean, we are really trying to move down the business chain, trying to incorporate a lot of small retailers, and also going to the countryside where you have locations in small cities with a very nice purchase power, but somehow we're not that explored. And this is somehow showing a very interesting result. Therefore, I would say that even if the average price was, I would say, increased in local terms, when you convert the local price into dollars, we are perhaps only now reaching the $50 per ton as an average price, what is considered a kind of still low price vis-a-vis other countries in the world. But yes, we want to make sure that we are going to keep the existing price.
Great, Paulo, thank you. An additional question from Jacob from Ashmore. He asked about the cash flow benefit from internalizing the cash flow from Paraguay. How he could access that information in the cash flow?
Well, Jacob, thank you for the question. There's no specific line with this benefit. What we registered is exactly on the payment that we have for our loans, which were paid. This gain is registered in this line. So considering the loan payment, that's how we registered this FX gain.
Question from Marcella from Morgan Stanley. She is asking about the exchange offer to if we could reinforce the message that we sent here about doing it next year or not.
Well, basically what we said was that in the past, I mean, when our board decided to pull off the offer, basically, we had already made a huge progress with our bondholders. We had discussed a lot and really tried to summarize all the positive and negative points. And during this time, we also tried to work on the points that somehow did not please our bondholders. And to be quite frankly, I guess that they were right, because some of those points were somehow being, I don't want to say forced by the ventures, but somehow I guess that we had to make sure that both investors, the bondholders, and the venture holders, they could leave in peace in future. Therefore, I would say that the company has been prepared itself for that. And there's no doubt that this exchange offer is going to be a matter of time that we are going to re-engage, because we do want to make sure that our debentures will not be triggered in 2024, but will be rolled up to 2027. Therefore, as soon as we get the board approval in the near future, we are going to be coming to the market again. So, and although this is the general direction, we cannot precise the time when this is going to happen.
Well, we also have a question from Mike Betts from Database Analytics. He's asking about if Brazil, we went through a sales decline during November. No, actually the operations in November have been doing well, still in the same level that was during the last month, and we are not seeing a decline yet.
Well, I guess that the question is with really regard to the Brazilian market. Cement sales. Yes, humors are that the overall sales in Brazil is a little bit down compared to the month of October, perhaps reaching even 10% lower. You know, initial guesses by the people around here in the marketplace is saying that that 5.9 million tons of October dropped to around 5.2 or 5.3 million tons for the whole country. Again, I guess that we have two factors. The first one was cyclicality. As we move towards the end of the year, the volume really drops. And the second point was, as we mentioned before, I guess that we really had a push in the V recovery format that somehow now it's reaching its ceiling.
Okay, another question from Monica Luengo from La Rigal. She's asking if there, we mentioned any capital increase from the shareholders.
No, Monica, we didn't mention any capital increase from shareholders. I believe that the worst part of the whole refinancing of the company had already passed. If you look to the past, you're going to remember that gross debt came from 3.6 billion euros to the current level, which is more than half of the size. Also, results are on a much better shape. So we don't see a reason that this would be an appropriate time to ask for such support.
Okay, so we have time for one last question. Question again from Monica Luengo Lahinvial about infrastructure government programs in Brazil.
Well, Monica, we don't see currently any huge program from the government on infrastructure. They do have infrastructure projects running in the country, especially on transportation. But that's not what moves the needle here in Brazil. As you know, 70% of the consumption, cement consumption, comes from bags, which is mainly auto construction and home builders. So this is the major engine for the cement demand in Brazil.
Okay, guys, then I guess we had a great morning despite all the infrastructure limitations for the call. But thank you.
Well, yeah, Gabriel, Nick, needless to say that I also enjoyed our earnings call. So let me thank you all for joining us today. As I mentioned in the past, I'm fully convinced that InterCement has all the strengths to overcome current and future challenges, with, of course, the support of our investors. No doubt that we will keep stretching ourselves to be a reference in the cement industry, especially in the South America and Africa regions. Once again, thank you all and have a great Friday. Stay safe and be healthy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for joining and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.